Thank you, Mr. Commissioner and Mr. Banker. About 15 years ago, I would have liked to meet you. Not that I don't need you tonight, but I'm getting by without you. But then I would have really put the touch on you. This afternoon, I met this speaker for tonight. He was introduced to me as a country boy from Arkansas. And as he came in the door there a while ago, he was so dressed up that until I wouldn't hardly call him a country boy. He looked like you city slickers. I don't know Ray's story. It's pretty hard to introduce a fellow that you just met about 3 hours ago. But when any fellow rides from Arkansas out here to share with me and with you his experience and hope, I don't know him now, but I'll know him when he finishes his talk tonight. Without any further ado, I give you Ray C. from Arkansas.
Ray Krell from Baseball, Arkansas. And if this guy thinks that the guest has had troubles, he ought to hear mine. I've been looking forward for 8 months to come down here. I was invited 8 months ago, and why I was invited, I don't know. And in 30 minutes, you'll be wondering yourself for the next 8 months why I was invited in the first place. But after looking forward all this time to this trip and anticipating what a wonderful time I was going to have, I got sick on the plane coming down here. Something always tears you up. It reminds me of an old boy up home named Les. His wife was dying. She called him in and said, "Les, I'm dying." He said, "Yeah, honey, I know it." Said, "I want you to do something for me." He said, "I'll do anything for you, honey." He said, she said, "You know, you and my mother never did get along." He said, "That's right. We never did." Said, "I want you to promise me that you'll ride in the same car with her to my funeral." He said, "I'll promise. But I want you to know one thing. It's going to take all the pleasure out of the trip." Never have I seen better hospitality than I have here. You people just seem to want to do everything for anybody that comes to town. I know when we first came into town, we didn't know anybody. Nobody knew us. We came down the street and we met a fellow on the corner and asked him where this AA convention was. And he said, "What? I don't know what the AA convention is. I wish I did. I wish I knew where it was. I see you're a stranger in town. I'd like to help you any way I could. I don't know, but I sure do wish you could." I said, "Well, that's all right, fella. Don't get excited about it. We'll find it. We'll find it." So we walked on down the street about a half a block. We heard somebody holler. We turned around, and there's this old boy calling us back. And we went back up there, and he had a fellow there standing talking to him, and he introduced us to him. He said, "This is Mr. Les." Said, I asked him where this AA convention was and said, "He don't know either." Came on down, sit down in the cafe. I was feeling pretty good, and being from a country boy from way up in Arkansas, I wanted to play the big shot. So the waitress came around, and I was very demanding. I wanted my coffee warmed up. I wanted a little more sugar, and I kept demanding, and she kept running backwards and forwards, and I started to leave, and I left her a 3-cent tip. She called me back, and she said, looked at me, she said, "I want to tell your fortune." I said, "All right, be glad to hear it." She picked up one of these pennies and looked at it and turned it over. She said, I can see with this penny that you're a conservative man. I said, that's right, that's right. She picked up another penny and turned it over and looked at it. She said, I can see with this penny that you're a bachelor. And I said, that's right, that's right. And she picked up the other penny and turned it over and looked at it and said, I can see by this that your father was a bachelor too. So it's definitely been wonderful coming down here. When I got here, there's a guy down here named Virgil W. that said you can't talk long. He said, now, you're limited to the time that you can talk. And I said, well, now, look, I'm not going to fly 1,000 miles and spend 20 years hunting a bottle and 20 years hiding it and come down here and tell my story in 15 minutes. It won't work. Because the last time I went to a meeting like this, I started talking and a few fellas walked out and I talked some more walked out, and I talked a little more, and some more walked out, and finally there was one old boy sitting right down on the front, and I poured my heart out to him, and I talked, and he sat there and listened, and he listened. When I got through, I said, fella, I appreciate you more than you'll know. I know you're interested in this movement, or you wouldn't sit there and listen to me through all this. He said, fella, I'm the janitor. I'm waiting to clean the place up. I don't know whether everybody's like me has a terrible inferiority complex that every time you go into a cafe and sit down, you think everybody's looking at the back of your neck, or you can go in a theater and sit down, you think everybody's looking at you. Walk down the street, you think people's talking about you. Well, that's the way I do. So I live up there in Arkansas, so I'm going down in Georgia. Nobody down there knows me. I'll leave this complex at home. I'll get me a new suit of clothes and a new shirt and a new tie. I'll get my hair cut, and I'll go down there, and I won't have this complex. But my wife forgot to iron my underwear, and it seemed like everybody here knows about it. But I am an alcoholic, and that's what I want to talk to you about. I don't have any statistics. I know you're not interested in those, but I want to tell you a little about my own experience. In my hometown, it's a small one. I had a cousin up there named Les who manufactured whiskey. He was a bootlegger. And I had a cousin named Joe who sold it. And I consumed it. It was a family affair. But we got caught up with. The revenuers got Les and gave him 2 years. And the city police got Joe and gave him 6 months. And Alcoholics Anonymous got me and give me life. And that's why I'm here. Now, I'm a CPA by trade. That's cleaning, pressing, and alteration. And I've done this all my life. When I was in the 11th grade, I got a job delivering cleaning at a cleaner. And the town was a small town. They had two policemen. One of them was a day policeman, and the other one was a night policeman, and the night policeman was my father. And he put me in jail the first 8 times I was ever in jail. Now, the first drink of anything that I ever took was Jamaica ginger. And I know, I don't remember for sure, but I'm almost positive that we called the fire department to put that stuff out. That was the hottest stuff I ever seen. But it took away that complex that I had. And it took everything else away I had. But it answered my problem. It made me better looking. It made me dance better. And oh, I was all right then. And I thought, well, now this is living. This is really living. Little did I know what it was going to grow into. I started drinking on Saturday night. It wasn't long. I believe I was an alcoholic even before I was ever took a drink, because I never did take a drink and I didn't get drunk. But it went on for a little while, and then one morning I was down at work, and one of the boys, I was sick, had this terrible hangover. And he said to me, he said, go get a drink. I said, Lord, I don't want nothing to drink. I don't want anything. But he told me, and he said, you'll feel better. So I took that drink. Then I knew I had it made. Because it did make me feel better. I said, now I can go out and I can get drunk when I want to. And I can come back and I can stay sober for a while and get drunk, take a few drinks, go on to work. Well, this went on for a while. Then it wasn't long until I started drinking a little more each day, and I'd get drunk and stay drunk 2 or 3 days. And it ran into a week. My dad, being a marshal, he came down one afternoon and he said, Ray, said, you're drunk. And I said, Dad, if I'm not, I've wasted a lot of money. And he put me in jail and kept me 30 minutes. And he turned me out. The next time he picked me up, he put me in there and kept me overnight. Then every time I'd get drunk, he'd put me in jail. He wouldn't ask any more questions. And this went on. One morning about 3 o'clock, I came in home, and sitting on the front porch was a suitcase. And I opened the door, and there stood my dad. And I said, Dad, are you going somewhere? He said, no, but you are. I said, where am I going? He said, well, you're leaving. I said, why, Dad? He said, you just drank too much. I can't do anything with you, and I'm not going to let you stay in my house and drink. Well, I was going with a little girl there in the town. And you know how an alcoholic will do. I said to myself, now, I'll go marry that girl. And I'll have this responsibility, and I won't drink anymore. So I went down to see her, and she's working at a 5 and 10 cent store. And I said, will you marry me? She said, no, you drink too much. I said, well, I'll quit. She said, no, you've got to prove it to me. I said, no, I'm going to be after you at 7 o'clock this evening, and we're going to go get married. She said, don't come, I'm not going to marry you. I said, you be ready, I'll be there. So that was back when you could go down to the courthouse and buy the license and marry that day. So I went down, I bought the license, took them back up there at the store, and I said, are you going to, I've got the license. She said, take them back, I'm not going to marry you. I said, you be ready at 7, I'll be after you. Don't come, take the license back. 7 o'clock, I went up there, and that poor little silly thing was ready, and she wasn't married me. And I thought that by that, me getting married, that I could quit this drink. And I did. I didn't drink anymore for 2 weeks. At the end of 2 weeks, I went out with the boys and got drunk. Stayed drunk all day and came in that evening. When I sobered up, came to, her heart was broken and so was mine. Because I really didn't intend to drink. And I thought about it and I said, well, I can quit any time. Of course, she cried about it, and I felt bad about it. I went on to work the next morning. It wasn't long till I started getting drunk again. I worked in every cleaning press and shop in town. I'd wake up some morning and didn't even know what cleaning press and shop I was supposed to work at. They started putting me in jail every week. They put me in jail so many times up there that some people thought I was the jailer. They worked me on the streets. I ran out of money. I had to work my fines out. I remember one day they decided they put me in jail and fined me, and I didn't have any money, and they turned me loose. And in a few days, they picked me up for being drunk again, and they turned me loose. And I said, well, I've got that part of it made anyway. They know I'm broke. They're not going to work me on the streets. I can at least get drunk and get in jail and get out without having to pay a fine. So one morning, his mayor came around. That's before we had a municipal court, just had a mayor. His name was Les, Mayor Les, we called him. He came around, he said, Ray, you owe us $99. I said, for what? He said, for being drunk. We got all these fines piled up against us. I said, man, I can't pay you $99. He said, well, I'm going to send you to the pea patch here. I said, where is that? He said, that Little Rock, Pulaski County pea patch. If you don't pay this $99, of course, I couldn't pay the $99, so here we went. I never had done any farming, so they took me down there. Never will forget the first morning I got there. They had a one-eyed Methodist preacher down there. His name was Les. We called him Preacher Les. Some guy said, how'd you lose that eye, preacher? He said, looking for work. And they said, you found it. They called him out that morning and said, preacher, when you go out there in that cotton patch today, said, we want you to pick 100 pounds of cotton. He said, if the Lord's willing, I'll get it. He went out there and he picked cotton all day, and he came in that night and he didn't have any whiskey. Next morning, this captain called him out and said, preacher, when you go out there today, I want you to pick 200 pounds of cotton. He said, if the Lord's willing, I'll pick it. He came in that night and he didn't have any luck, beat him to death. And he called him out the next morning and said, preacher, when you go out there today now, I want you to get 300 pounds of cotton. He said, by God, if it's out there, I'll get it. Called us out that real snowy morning, ice in the ditch, water in the ditch, and he looked us over and he said, boys, said, all you fellas that's got boots on now, said, get in that ditch and clean it out. And said, you fellas that haven't got boots on, said, you get in there with them. I'll tell you now, that's not any place for old folks down there. They work you from daylight to dark. I never will forget, that's the first time I ever heard about help. We hear about help in Alcoholics Anonymous, but they had an old boy down there. They had a dairy farm over there right close to it, and they told this old boy, said, Captain did, Captain Left was his name. Captain said, son, said, go over at that dairy barn and bring that bull over here. And this boy said, okay, Captain, and he went off, and he was gone a couple hours, and he came back, and he had his shirt tail out, and his shirt was all tore off of him, and he didn't have the bull. And he said, what's the matter? He said, I've got to have some help. The captain said, lay down there, I'll give you some help. And he laid down, he hit him about 10 licks with that strap, and he said, now go get that bull. And in 15 minutes, he come riding that bull by. And you done things down there that you never would dream of doing. And I got interested in farming down there. We put in a crop. And after he'd whooped about a half dozen of those guys, I really give that man a day's work. And I stayed down there and I had put that crop in. And I stayed 40 days and I stayed 40 nights. And I done a lot of thinking. I said, here I am, 36 years old. And I know right from wrong. And I've got myself into this predicament just from drinking whiskey. I'll go back home and I'll show those people that I can quit drinking and I'll make a decent city. And sure enough, I did. I didn't get drunk until I got on the bus going home. It was 10 miles out of Little Rock. And I went over to Little Rock, and my wife had a nephew over named Les. And I called old Les up. And I said, Les, I've been out on the pea patch for 40 days and 40 nights, and I'm hungry, and I haven't got any money to get home on. Would you loan me $10 to go home, and I'll send it right back to you? He said, I sure will, Ray, if you'll be sure and send it back. And I said, I guess I'll still owe that to you. But I bought me a fifth of whiskey and a bowl of chili, and that chili made me so sick I like to die. And I got off the bus drunk. And I stayed around town all that summer drinking and worrying about that crop I'd put in and how it was getting along. And was everything mecking, and I'd gotten interested in worrying about who was going to pick it, and all that worrying was for nothing. Because that fall, they racked me up and sent me back down there together. And I stayed down there 40 more days than 40 nights. And I done a lot of thinking. I said, here I am, 36 years old, and I know right from wrong. And I've gotten myself into this fix from drinking too much. And I'll quit. I won't ever drink again. And I was just as honest as I'm honest standing here before you. I was going to quit. And I did. It was 2 weeks that time before I got drunk. And I went back home and I started drinking again. And in the morning at Pearl Harbor was bombed. I was in jail. And I thought up this fantastic deal. I'll join the Army. So when the mayor brought me around, the old Mayor Les brought me in, he said, I'm going to fine you for being drunk. I said, I'll tell you what you'll do, Mayor. If you'll let me go, I'll go join the Army. He said, will you? I said, I sure will. He said, I'm going to do it. And I took off and went home and went to Little Rock to join the Army, and I stayed down there a week, and I hadn't went to that recruiting office still yet. And I went back up there, and he saw me on the street and wanted to know why I didn't join the Army, and I said they wouldn't have me. But there's something that happened right after that. I never have gotten stressed. The draft board called me. I went up there and I said, why am I the first married man in Independence County called up here? They said, go ask your mother-in-law. I went and asked my mother-in-law, and she wouldn't admit it. She said, go back to the board and ask them. But anyway, I was the first, and they took me down there. And they examined me. And they said I was fit for any branch of the service and wanted to know what when I wanted in. And I told them the Army, since I'd been in the National Guard. Until I got down to that psychiatrist right on the end, that doctor. Never will forget that. He's sitting over in the corner by himself, had a big sign up on his desk. Dr. Les, psychiatrist. He asked me a lot of questions, and I gave him a lot of answers. He said, son, do you ever drink anything? I said, anything. He said, how much do you drink? I said, all I can get. He said, you're too nervous for the Army. I said, what do you mean I'm too nervous for the Army? He said, you're either a neurotic, a psychotic, or an alcoholic. And I said, what's the difference, Doc? Well, he said, a psychotic thinks 2 and 2 is 5. Said a neurotic knows it 2 and 2 is 4, but it makes him nervous. He said an alcoholic just gets drunk and forgets the whole darn thing. It wouldn't even take me in the Army. And I said, this is a predicament. Here I am, not even fit to be killed. So I went back home and I worried and I drank about it. I worried and I drank some more. And they put me in jail some more. One morning this mayor came around it. And he started to find me. And I thought up this fantastic idea. I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll never take another drink as long as I live. And I'll tell you what if you'll do. If you let me go this time, if I ever take another drink, I'll let you put me down on the courthouse square. And I'll let you put a big sign up there. Says, here is Ray Crowell sitting out a drunk. And I'll stay there for 15 days, and you put a ball and chain on my leg. He said, will you do that? I said, I'll do it. He said, I'm going to take you up on it. And he said, I'll tell you what. If you do it, I'm going to put you down there. And I said, that's what I want you to do. That's the most humiliating thing that could ever happen to me. I wouldn't do that for $1 million. And that's how much I know that I'm going to quit. And it worked. It wasn't but 3 weeks till he'd called that sign painter. And they was a-fixing to put me down there on that courthouse square to sit out that 15 days. My wife had enough influence around with enough influential people that they went up there and stopped it. But I thought I could quit drinking. And every time anybody pat me on the back and say, Ray, you're a pretty good boy, you work good, but you drank too much. Then one morning on my desk, not my desk, it was a dresser, and that was always in the bedroom besides the bed, because I had the rest of it soaked. Because I'd stole my wife's clothes out of the closet, and I'd went and sold them for whiskey. And I had literally drank everything up that we'd had. And on this table was a piece of paper torn out of a newspaper. And on it, it said something about a Keely cure in Atlanta, Georgia. And I looked at it and I threw it away. And the next morning, I got up and it was back there again. And I said, where is this coming from? She said, well, Ray, I'll tell you. Said, your mother and I have done everything in our power to stop you from drinking. You've broke us. You've humiliated us. You've done everything in the world. And we have decided that if you will go to Atlanta, Georgia, and take this Keeley cure. We will save up our money and send it. And I hit the sale. I said, I don't have to go take a Keeley cure. I can quit drinking any time I get ready. But that piece of paper, I think, is why I'm here tonight, one reason. Because about that time, it dawned on me that it might be something wrong with me. Maybe I couldn't quit drinking. And this is the truth. I had never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous at that time. But I did know a boy who had left baseball. Name was Larry. He went to Little Rock, and he had been sober 2 years, and I'd heard about him. And I told my wife to call him up and tell him, ask him how he was staying sober. And she said, all right. So she called him. And this is what he said. Does Ray want to get sober, or is it you want him to get sober? She says, he says he does. But I don't want him to leave town, because every time he leaves town, I have to bail him out somewhere. Said, well, if he wants to quit drinking, send him down here. So I went down there. I walked in a store where he was selling shoes. He didn't look like the guy I used to drink with. He was dressed up. He had a twinkle in his eye. Best I remember, I was still in a daze. But he put on his coat and started out the door. And I said, you'll get fired. He said, no, I won't get fired. He said, you want to quit drinking? I said, yeah, I want to quit drinking. And I'd never heard of that. It was 1944. He said, well, we've got something here that will work for you. He said, will you go out to the state hospital and stay 10 days? I said, you mean out to the nut house? He said, yeah. I said, yeah, but I can't go now. I got a little business to attend to. He said, how long will it take you? I said, it'll take me a couple of weeks. He said, okay, go tend to your business and come back. I had a little more business than I thought. Because a year later, I asked my wife to call him up again. So she called him up. And what he said was, are you wanting him to come down here, or is he wanting to come down here? She said, last time he was down, I had to bail him out. It's him wanting to come. She said, bring him on down. So she said, I'm having to work. I can't bring him down till weekend. He said, that'll be fine. Bring him down on Sunday. So I went out up and down the main street. I mooched and dined. I was telling everybody, old Ray's going off and take a cure. Would you give me a dime to get this last drink with? I knew the guys I could get a dime off of. I knew the ones I could get a quarter off of. And I said, I'm not going to drink anymore. This is my last drink. And so I've done all right for that rest. But I got drunk and they put me in jail. They came around to get me and I said, boys, I'm going to go to Little Rock and take some kind of cure. I'm not going to drink anymore and I'm going to go down there next Sunday. And if you don't believe it, you go ask my wife because she's going to take me. And so they went and asked him. Of course, she told him that. And so they turned me loose to go home to clean up. Instead of going home to clean up, I got something else to drink. And the next morning, they picked me up again. Same week. So, came around, I said, did you see my wife? Yeah, we saw her. You know she's going to take me down to take this cure? Yeah, we know that. And Ray, we're going to cooperate with you. You're going to be right here when she gets ready to take me. And that's where I was, in jail. So they took me to Little Rock again. Same guy. This time we went on the train, he met me at the train. What he asked me was, he said, do you want to quit drinking? I said, yeah, I want to quit drinking. He said, how bad do you want to quit drinking? I said, I want to quit drinking worse than anything in this world. He said, do you want to quit drinking bad enough to go out to the nut house? I said, yeah, I'll go. He said, let's go up to the club room. I didn't know what the club room was. I went up there and it had 15 or 20 people in there. It looked about like you people do. We sit around and talked a while, and he said, I believe you're sincere about this. I said, I never was more sincere about anything in my life. I want to quit drinking. So he appointed me a sponsor, he told me. And this sponsor handed me this book. It's a entitled Alcoholics Anonymous. I looked at it, it's a 400-page book. He said, you've got 3 days to read this. If you haven't ever took that Little Rock program up, or you ain't never been nowhere. And I said, well, to myself, I didn't to him, I said, now who in the world ever heard of it taking a man 3 days with nothing else to do to read a 400-page book? But I didn't tell him that. But I fell in love with my sponsor then, because I knew that there was a guy who was going to tell me what to do or give me a pill or give me something, and my drinking was going to be over. I wouldn't ever have to be troubled with this thing anymore. And he left. And I read the book all day, and that night, the next morning, he came in, and I was sitting over there reading it, and I peeped over the book at the top of it to see where his little pill bag was to get my pill that was going to stop me from drinking. And he didn't have no pill bag with him. And so he asked me how I was doing. I said, fine. And he left. That's all he said to me. And I thought, well, ain't that a heck of a guy? And I went on and read my book, and next day he came up, second day. He said, how are you getting along? I said, I'm getting along fine. I've got my book read. I thought I was smart. He said, well, study it. And it dawned on me then and there that he wasn't going to give me any pill. That my answer to sobriety must be in that book somewhere. And I never was too smart when I read anything. I had to reread it a dozen times. But I'd read those 12 steps on page 71, and they sounded good to me. And I could see my picture in that book, and I knew that that guy had watched me all my life when he wrote it. Because he said everything that I'd ever done. It was a few things I got by with that he didn't know about, but the rest of them were in there. And so I said, well, I'll read these steps some more, because my answer must be in them. And I read them, and they sounded good, and I read them again, and they sounded better. And I read them some more, and I decided I'd learn them by heart, and I learned them by heart, and that didn't help me too much. And I said, well, I guess I better start in and see what's in them. And so I took the first one, said we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Well, that was easy for me to answer, because that's why I'd been on that P-PAG. And that's why I'd been turned out of the Army, and that's why that my wife was threatening to leave me, and that's why I was sitting there at that table at that particular time reading this particular book, is because I was powerless over alcohol. I knew it. Wasn't any doubt in my mind. So I threw that aside and got the second one. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I said to myself, I took a little inventory there then, and I thought about my past, about how my father and my mother had promised me anything within their humble means if I'd quit drinking. And I thought about my wife, who for 19 years had asked nothing of me, only that I stay sober. She even told me she had made a living for me, and if I just get drunk on weekends, where she could take care of me. And I knew that she loved me, and that she had quit for me if she could. I knew my father and mother loved me, and they'd quit for me if they could. Then I thought about my bosses that I'd worked for. And I knew that they liked me well enough to give me job after job that they would have quit for me. Then I thought about the laymen and the preachers in my hometown who'd come to me and said, Ray, you're not a bad fellow, but you drank too much. And I knew they were interested in me, and I knew they'd quit for me if I could. Then I thought about myself. I said, now I can't quit. I can't do it. None of those people can do it for me. I know that I can't do it. And there's not any human aid for me on this earth. There's not a human in this world that can do anything for me, including myself. And so I went to the third step. Make the decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand it. Well, I could stand here for 3 years and try to tell you what happened then, but I'll never be able to tell you. But I told God, and the only way I know how, I said, God, here I am, a miserable wreck. Everything that I've done has gone wrong. I haven't anything to offer, but if you can take my life and do anything with it, it's yours to do with as you please. I give up. Well, I can't tell you what happened, but I was catapulted to a new world. I know that in a twinkling of an eye, there was a miracle performed in my life. I knew from an instant that Ray Crowell didn't have to drink anymore. I got out on my knees and I prayed. And I had the most wonderful feeling of anybody in the world. And I cried. And I stayed up all night long. I didn't even go to sleep. Prayed this thing would leave it. And my sponsor came in the next morning. He said, I told him, I said, there's something happened to me. And I explained it to him. He said, I know what it was. But I didn't get it that way. I wish I had. But I knew right then that if you give me 5 minutes with anybody in this world, and I could sober them up. I said, I'll tell them about this thing, and they won't be no more drinking. And I had a fellow that I'd run around with up there. Guess what was his name, Dick? Larry, yeah. I can't ever remember that guy's name. But he was the first fellow I was going to get in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I haven't got him in there yet. I never will forget the time my wife, I got so bad back there in the early stages, my wife was going up Main Street one day leading an old mangy hound dog. And she met one of her girlfriends, and she said, look what I got for Ray. And the lady said, well, I knew you'd get a break someday, Ella. How much boot did you give? But I'm like everybody in here. I know that our friends give us too much credit for being sober. We all know that God does it. The fellow who wrote the poem must have been an alcoholic. I met God in the morning when the day was at its best. His presence came like sunshine, like a glory in my breast. All day long, his presence lingered. All day long, he stayed defended. And we sailed in perfect calmness for our troubled sea. Other ships were blown and battered. Other ships were torn distressed. And the wind that seemed to blow them brought to me both peace and rest. Then I thought of other mornings with a deep remorse of mind, when I too had loosed the morning with his presence left behind. So I think I know the secret, caused by many a troubled way. You must meet God in the morning if you want him through the day. And I'm sure you're all familiar with the last 7 lines of that book of Alcoholics Anonymous. They read as follows. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We will be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet more of us as you tread along that road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. And that brings me up to the story of the three bears. Papa Bear, Mama Bear, and Baby Bear. They all went out walking in the woods one day. They come to a knife house. Papa Bear sat out on a cake of ice and got up and told his version of it. Mama Bear sat out on a cake of ice and got up and told her version of it. Baby Bear sat out on a cake of ice and got up and said, my tale is told. Thank you.